Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been a lot of political unrest in South Korea, some crazy things going on there. And if you haven't been paying attention to it, you probably should, because it's very important. It's a very important ally to the United States and to stability in Southeast Asia. And here to talk to us about it is Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Bruce, this kind of was not on my radar, and as I began to read more and more about it, some very troubling circumstances and movements going on in South Korea.
Very much so, and it really came as a surprise even to longtime Korea watchers. I had been in Seoul about 2 weeks before President Yoon declared martial law, and in my meetings with government officials, no one said, hey, what you really need to be worried about or concerned with is the president becoming increasingly frustrated with the opposition party in their Congress, which the opposition has a majority. So it was quite a surprise. What happened was President Yoon, the South Korean president, declared martial law on December 3rd, and he, you know, in his remarks, it was that there was this national emergency, that pro-North Korean forces were threatening democracy. And yet when he actually released the official decree, it became clear it really was just frustration with an obstructionist opposition party. But they do have a majority in their single house National Assembly. So that's the price of democracy. It's frustrating, but it's democracy. So it really doesn't meet the test of what would be required for actually declaring martial law. He sent troops and police to prevent their congressmen from voting on rescinding the national law, which is allowed under the Constitution. So he called martial law for insufficient reasons, and then he tried to prevent their Congress from, according to their constitution, from voting against it. So in return, the National Assembly impeached him, and we're now waiting on the Constitutional Court to see if they uphold or reject the impeachment motion. If they uphold it, then he will be, he's already lost his powers, but he would be formally removed from office. And then within 60 days, South Korea would have a new election for president. In parallel with that, the opposition party has brought criminal charges against him for a number of what are really foreign policy decisions that they disagree with. So I think the president was wrong in calling out martial law, that the impeachment motion should be upheld. But the opposition party is overreaching itself. They're delving into political issues and trying to use those as justification for a criminal charge against the president. And what we've seen is the South Korean public's opinion of both ruling and opposition party has really switched. Right after the martial law and impeachment, the president had very, very low public approval ratings, as well as his ruling party. And the opposition was in the 40% or so. Right now, because of a reaction against what's seen as overreach by the opposition, actually now the president has higher approval ratings than before the impeachment. And the ruling party is just a little bit higher than the opposition party, which has given the ruling party more confidence that they might actually win the special election. The president has been taken into custody. Right now, he's sitting in solitary confinement as they await the results of both the constitutional and the criminal cases. And right now, the opposition leader, who would be presumably their candidate for presidential election, he's under five or so indictments for various criminal charges. So it really is a bizarre situation, to say the least.
Many aspects of this sound eerily familiar. I don't know how else to say it. But when he was elected, did I read somewhere that he won by 0.8%?
Yes.
Was that right?
Very, very close election. And then this past April, they had an election for the single House National Assembly, and the opposition won really by a landslide. So they have been obstructing the president's agenda and calling for numerous impeachments charges against the president, the first lady, as well as a number of cabinet officials. And that's what frustrated the president and led him to call martial law.
So that's the micro view, macro. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of unrest. There's issues going on in Japan. Southeast Asia right now seems to be a little bit of a mess. You throw some of the happenstances in Thailand in there as well. And, I mean, it's not a stable picture.
No. And the thing was, just a few months ago, let's say, you know, as late as early September, you know, the U.S., South Korea, and Japan on their foreign and security policies were in very strong alignment. It was like three horses pulling very strongly all in the same direction in the same harness. And the only questions were what would be the details of the U.S. foreign and security policies in the Indo-Pacific if President Trump was elected? Would he alter policies, and to what degree? And that was really the only question mark. Since then, Japan had a leadership change, which itself wasn't an issue. But then he called for a snap election going out to the public, thinking he would win, and that would give him a mandate to push back against any critics within his own party. Well, it went disastrously wrong. The public really rebuked the ruling party. They lost their majority in their legislature for the first time in 15 years. And now he's leading a minority government, and he has to go to the opposition for votes for any kind of legislation. So the Japanese ship of state's going in the right direction. It's still in the same direction, which is very much in alignment with U.S. strategic interests. But the sails are luffing. It's inefficient. It's, you know, as the captain has to put any issue to a vote to the crew. And then now you have South Korea, where if the opposition wins, they would pursue very different policies, very out of alignment with what both the outgoing and incoming U.S. administrations would like. They, in the past, have been very conciliatory towards China, North Korea, very antagonistic to Japan because of historic issues, which undermines the resurgence or the rapprochement in South Korean-Japan relations, which has enabled a much better trilateral security cooperation with the U.S. And then the opposition also has a more standoffish approach towards the alliance with the U.S. They've often blamed the U.S. instead of North Korea for raising tensions on the Korean Peninsula. So, you know, right now we have three ships of state where we're not sure what Mr. Trump's policies will be, if they'll be different from the past. Japan right now is the steady ship of state, and then South Korea may be veering off in a very different direction. So just when the Trump administration is coming in looking for, you know, strong, stalwart partners to address not only the North Korean but the expanding China threat, we're facing a lot more uncertainty in the region.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
We're visiting with Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Bruce, it's almost as if we're in, I guess this is safe to say we're in, it's four different theaters, so to speak. I don't remember this much confusion and unrest in modern times. Would that be an overstatement?
Well, if we look at the Indo-Pacific, really the sort of the unifying theme is China being much more belligerent in really all the theaters or sub-theaters of the Indo-Pacific. And as China has grown in economic and military strength, it's really been throwing its weight around. It's very coercive, very intimidating towards its neighbors, including way down in Southeast Asia and Australia. And they've been so really blatant in their tactics that it has led to much better coordination and collaboration, including on economic cooperation to try to diversify from an over-reliance on trade with China, and then on security relationships. But now, just in the last few months, this turmoil, particularly in Northeast Asia, has thrown that, you know, really into questionable, you know, issues as to how far collaboration will go in the future.
Well, I have to imagine that whatever preliminary thought process was going on in the Trump administration about what their approach would be diplomatically, going to have to change to some extent, right? I mean,
I think the
opposition
really
party in South Korea is fairly radical.
Yeah. When I met with one of their congressmen who had served in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for many years, you know, he's saying that the party has changed in the last 2 years since the progressive president or liberal president left office, that they're not as radical as people perceive them to be, that the supporters of the previous president lost in the primaries before the April election. But most people don't think it's evolved that much. So really, there's a great deal of uncertainty or even concern about what policies they would pursue. So, you know, the Trump administration is coming in, and really there's a bipartisan consensus in Washington now of the need to confront the multifaceted and growing China threat. And we're looking for strong partners and allies in the region. And now, you know, some of those allies are a bit more questionable in which either which policies they will pursue or how effectively or strongly they'll be able to implement their policies.
And I guess China's looking at this as an as kind of another crack in a door, right?
Exactly.
Whatever.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, and then North Korea has been actually very quiet. They're just sort of sitting back and enjoying watching South Korea have this political turmoil, the even stronger partisanship than even just a month or so ago. So they just, you know, I think are, you know, adopting Napoleon's adage of never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. So North Korea is just watching South Korea kind of tear itself apart. You know, that said, the military, the U.S. and South Korean military, the intelligence communities, the State Departments are working very closely and, you know, maintaining a very watchful eye on North Korea to prevent them from trying to take advantage of it. But it's the question. So right now, when South Korea would want to engage with President Trump directly at the executive level, they're stymied in that. They have an acting president. And actually, after the President Yoon was impeached, they had an acting president who himself was impeached. So now you really have sort of a third string president in an acting position.
I missed that in my readings. I don't even, it's like, man, we're going from bad to worse.
I mean, yeah, it's they've gone to the bullpen, you know, twice already. And the opposition has even threatened this second acting president with impeachment if he doesn't do what they want. So it's a pretty tumultuous time over there. You know, that said, it is very stable there. You may see photos of very large demonstrations, both pro and against the president. But they are very peaceful. They even pick up their trash after their demonstrations. I was in Seoul last week again. And it's very quiet. It's very stable. So it's not a question of the government being, you know, overthrown or violent demonstrations as occurred in past years in South Korea. It's very orderly, business as usual. It's just at the very top, you have this political battle between the president, the ruling party, and the opposition party.
Yeah, this will be interesting to see as this unfolds with incoming administration, because I have to imagine there is some exigency to this, right, from a foreign policy perspective.
Right. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, partners to kind of get on board, you know, in pushing back against China, and different countries in the Indo-Pacific, they're, you know, more or less willing to do that. Sort of, you know, our allies have been increasingly concerned by China and more willing to do things, not only security cooperation, but trying to diversify business away from China, because China uses the fact that they are the largest trading partner for all the countries in Indo-Pacific as a way to intimidate them on political or diplomatic or security issues. But other countries, particularly in Southeast Asia, smaller nations, you know, they don't want to be forced to choose between
right.
sort of the security guarantor of the U.S. and then the biggest trading partner, China. So they've done a lot of fence sitting, trying to, you know, kind of wring their hands and say, don't make us choose. And the U.S. is sort of saying, look, if you're afraid of taking action in your own interest because of fear of Chinese retribution, it shows you're in an abusive relationship and
yes.
should take steps to try to eliminate that or reduce that.
No doubt. Bruce Klingner, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time and your insight. We'll be checking back with you as things progress here, because I think this is going to be a big challenge. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's Bruce Klingner, Senior Research Fellow, Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. He's got a great piece that he wrote about this. You can just go to the Heritage site or just Google his name and you'll find it there. Breaking news, Trump's inauguration has moved indoors to the Capitol Rotunda. They're expecting temperatures of about 12 degrees, not counting the wind chill. So they are going indoors now on Monday. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.